This is where we hold them! This is where we fight!
Now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.
Rob, what's good, homie?
Mike, guess what day it is? Thursday night, man. We are back on air. Thursday nights, dude. We haven't been on Thursday nights in a really long time. Good to be back talking some bowling. There's been a lot of shit going on this week, especially shows and whatnot. So I don't know where you want to get started here. I know we got a guest. We already see the chat. Hashtag Free Flanagan. It's already trending on the chat. So, yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a wild night tonight, I think, here. But, Mike, I know you were talking about your betting. I don't know if you want to get right into it. We're not doing league review. We're saving league review for Sunday night. Well, we're saving worst of the week for Sunday night.
You're giving the people behind the scenes access here, because like I came on a few minutes early to chop it up with you, and the first thing I said to you is that, and people, please don't take this the wrong way. Love the Sweep the Rack little community we have here, but I didn't really want to do this podcast tonight. I'm fried. Your boy is fried from bowling. Okay. I honestly need to not be around anything bowling related for at least 24 hours. Okay. Hopefully I'm ready to go for the shows on Saturday, but your boy got juice today. Okay. Like a piece of fruit that just gets squeezed for all it's worth. That's kind of what happened to me today. Sometimes I think I'm the world's best bowling better, and sometimes I think I'm the bowling world's biggest black cloud. It depends what day it is. It depends what hour it is, what block it is. It was a rough day. That's all. Betting round robin. First of all, shout to Bet Rivers. Shout to Bet Rivers for giving us option to bet basically every game in match play today except the position round. I was tapped out, so I didn't even look. But shout to Bet Rivers for giving us the opportunity to bet on all these round robin match play games. But oh my God, Rob, betting on round robin match play is hard. Betting on round robin match play is really, really hard. It's so much harder than betting the best out of five or the best out of seven. There's just so much more involved. It's such a quicker pace. You got to really be paying attention to what's going on. I'm fried. Doyle in the chat saying I sound like Tommy Haag. I do. I'm fried, Hoss. I'm fried. Please.
Yeah. I stayed away from betting a lot during this World Series. And a lot of that reason why is the unpredictability of like everything going on the last 2 weeks. And I know we'll talk more in the shows and we'll talk when Mike comes on and stuff about what he's kind of observed. But the minute that first pattern went down in Cheetah and, you know, the left looked good and the scores were high and we saw so many unknown names was the first indicator for me to kind of stay away a little bit. Unless like, I'm sure. See, you're different, better than I am. I'm a lot safer, better than you are. You're of a gambler mentality more than I do. I like sure bets. I text you last night. You know, we'll talk a little bit. I was like, Mike, this is the bet right here. Like, take it. Trust me. And we did, and we cashed. But I didn't bet a lot. And you're firing it in. I love you. I love you for that. But, man, I mean, you got like, you're out of control sometimes with your parlays. You're putting 3, 4, 5 leggers, you know, like just kind of like wilding out on the Bet Rivers app, man. And they must love you.
Listen, I'll start it off with one bet, and then we're bringing our guest on. We're bringing our guest on because we care about the bowling community, okay? But before we bring them on, just as an example, Rob, the other night on the show, Kevin Williams was bowling Jesper Svensson, okay? And at the end of that game, Jesper, at the end of the first game, Jesper's ball reaction kind of like went away, and you could see him in the fill ball throw another ball, and he was like kind of fishing, and I was like, oh, okay. You know, it doesn't look like he has a real good look. And Kevin Williams was the dog in that match. All right. So just as an example of what you were talking about, just in that game alone, Kevin Williams versus Jesper Svensson, I went Kevin Williams to win and the under, okay, 20 to win 90. Kevin Williams to win straight up, 20 to win 45, and Kevin Williams plus 9.5, 40 to win 75, and I won all three bets, okay, in that game. So, like, yeah, you know, I get a little, you know, I mean, the money amounts aren't out of control, but you're right. I do like to press the action button a little bit at times. But listen, I gotta say, I've had an amazing week of watching, 2 weeks, really, 2 weeks of watching bowling and betting on bowling. I put out a tweet at one point that I had like 800 in bets and I was up about 400. You know, at this point, I don't even know. I probably have 1,500, 1,600 in bets for the week and a half, and I'm still up close to 400. So, you know, as tough as a day as I had today, and, you know, I had a lot of losses, and you're right, a lot of my bets lose. When I do hit them, I hit them hard. I hit them real hard. And we'll give some examples of that throughout the night tonight. But all right, we'll get to the, if you like talking betting, you know, I love talking betting.
I'm like, let's just get to Mike.
Rob wants to limit the betting talk, but I will limit the betting talk right now because we do have a guest and we're going to bring him on. But Mike Flanagan, what's good, bro?
Hey, I like talking betting, guys.
No, we're not talking betting just yet. We'll get to that in a bit. There's more things to talk about here. There's more important things to talk about here, okay? Mike, we are going to ask the question that the bowling world demands an answer to, okay? Do you feel me? The bowling world deserves an answer to this question, and I'm going to give you the floor. Mike, where have you been, bro?
Yeah, I've been home in St. Louis. That's where I've been. Been working here, doing stuff with my other businesses. So, yeah, I've been here in St. Louis. And at the Inside Bowling headquarters I've got behind me here on this virtual background that I found.
I thought that was the USBC headquarters.
No. This is Inside Bowling headquarters. I had to pay a lot of money for those lamps back there, actually.
Okay, so I'm going to further ask another question here is, where have you been on the Bull TV side of things? Right now, we got a lot of bowling going on at the World Series, a lot of streaming. There's been a lot of tournaments going on, the Masters, whatnot. What's been going on? Like, what's been happening on your end?
Milk carton, Mike Flanagan.
Yeah,
that's what I have to say, son.
Yeah. Well, I'm watching Bolt TV right now. To see who makes it in here. Did Belmo just miss? I think he might have just missed. I'm not sure. But look, guys, when it comes to this Bolt TV thing, couple things I gotta say off the top. USBC has given me a ton of opportunity, okay, over the last, man, it's going on 6-7 years. They've used me for a lot of different things, and I cannot thank them enough, okay? And that's all of them. Chad Murphy, Jason Overstreet, Roger Nordic, Jason Thomas, and everybody at the International Bowling Campus. Like, I was down there recently. I've met them all. They do a lot of great work down there. And they do a good job, and I appreciate all the work they've given me over the years. Okay, that's no doubt. Since I didn't work a few events, I cannot thank the outpour of support for my broadcasting style which I would have never imagined would have happened. Honestly, I just thought I was just another dude, but for whatever reason, a bunch of people missed me. And that also includes you guys. I mean, you guys have been so nice and we've been friends. So sometimes when your friends really miss you, you know, it doesn't mean as much, although I appreciate you guys, but some of the people I've heard from on these instant messenger requests on Facebook that I've never met in my life, that I just didn't realize there were so many people that enjoyed my corniness, as some people like to say. And, you know, I've got three types of comfort levels. One is an extreme vulgarity side of me that most people wouldn't know. And I can't ever go there on air.
It's too bad.
And then the cool hip version of me, which is probably what I'm worst at, like what you would see on a regular show. And then there's the corny dad jokes. And I hit those out of the park all day long. So, but the support that I've had from these folks is, I really can't believe it. And then the players, I can't believe how many players have reached out to me or called me and asked what's up or what's going on. And to have the respect of the players has been unbelievable as well. I didn't realize I'd hear from so many players. Just checking to make sure I was okay. You know, I wasn't, you know, dealing with something much bigger. I do appreciate USBC keeping it pretty private, our dealings with this. There's not much that's been out about this, and I can't thank them enough for that as well. I also, and I know I'm thanking a lot of people here, but I do want to also thank all the people that I've worked with on the road, the proprietors. When you go to set up a live stream, you are like in the proprietor's office hooking into a router. You're making sure you're hitting fire codes. You know, we also had a new tournament director this year in Tony Lanning, who's done a tremendous job. And Tony and I were really hitting it off. We were doing well. I loved working with John Weber. When you go out to work a live stream, man, it is more than just working with your crew. It's working with everybody there. Sully on the truck gets all of your stuff there. You know, Don, everybody out there, man, they help load in your stuff. Like a lot goes into this. A lot goes into this. Okay. So working with those people, I wouldn't have been able to last as long as I did if I wasn't working with great people. I mean, that is legit. Okay. And then, I also just want to let everybody know that if you follow this show, you should subscribe to Bowl TV, whether there's commentary or not. Because when I was a kid, if I could have subscribed to something and watched every ball go down the lane with good commentators, bad commentators, whatever your favorite flavor is at Baskin Robbins, I think I'm mint chocolate chip, by the way. Not everybody loves mint chocolate chip, but they sell a lot of mint chocolate chip. So I'm mint chocolate chip. But I think that everybody should subscribe to Bowl TV. So with all that said, the biggest reason I'm not calling action on Bowl TV is me. I am the reason I am not on Bowl TV. It is not to blame anybody else. It's me. And it's my behavior. It's me as a 44-year-old man compared to a 35-year-old, very, very eager and anxious young man. It's getting tough. It's gotten kind of tough, and I've gotten a bit grumpy as I've gotten older out there on the road. I don't think any of it's come off on air, and not with my teammates. But you know, when you have those conversations about certain things, you know, needing to be better or whatever, and you start talking about those things, you know, I probably should have presented some of the things I had to say a little differently. But at the same time, I was struggling with this. Do I work on my business at home, or do I commit 120 days on the road with Bowl TV? You know, and the problem here is I feel very connected to that project, Bowl TV. I helped build it with those folks, and they gave me the opportunity. And they trusted me, and they still trust me. They want what's best for me. I don't know what's best for me, and I told them that. And when you're in a job interview and somebody says, do you want the job? And you go, I guess. That's not the best thing you want to hear, right? And I'm really at the point where I kind of been in the I guess, or what should I be doing? And you know, what's the upside with working for Bowl TV for the next 10 years? You know, what's the pay increase look like, right? Or if I build my online pro shop in St. Louis or my apparel business and those sorts of things, there's way more upside to set myself up for the future. And it's kind of like Mike Fagan, right? Mike Fagan was bowling on tour. He was at the top of his game, and he left because there was only so much upside, and he decided to take another career, right? The difference in this particular situation is I didn't tell him I was leaving, but I told him what I was thinking about, and they helped make the decision for me. I am still on the team. I still may be used in the future, but I think they're really just letting me take time right now to figure out what it is that I want to do. I think if I called them tomorrow and said, guys, I figured this whole thing out. I want to commit 100% to the Bowl TV project, and here's why. And I presented my case, I'd be back on the air. I think I could be back on the air. But I'm really in a transitional period in my life with moving back to St. Louis. I get to see my family, and I get to sleep in my own bed every night. So that's kind of where I'm at right now with everything. USBC didn't do anything wrong. I didn't do anything wrong. It just came to this like point of like, you know, what should we be doing here? And I would have liked to have worked an event and maybe been able to kind of sort of say goodbye to the audience, or, you know, hey, I'm going to work less or something like that. And we've had some conversations about that, but that's where I've been. That's where I'm at. So that's a long answer. But that's really what I'm here to tell you about that. I really just reached out to you guys because I miss calling some bowling and talking about bowling action. I've been watching these shows, and I wanted to kick it with you guys tonight. So I understand everybody wants to know, why am I not on Bowl TV and that? And hopefully that helps answer some questions. If you have any follow-ups, you know, no problem.
Mm. Sounds like a little bit of a farewell, though, speech you just gave. Like, you know, I don't know. I'm not liking the farewell speech here. I think it's safe to say, all of our chat too, you know, we miss you on the show. We really do. It's not the same. And I think we could say that as fans that watch consistently. And yeah, man, whatever you do, we wish you the best of luck. And honestly, we'll support your online bowling pro shop. We'll support any future endeavors you go through. And you have an open invitation anytime you want to come chat bowling, Mike. You're always welcome if you need to get that fixing.
Let me be unequivocal here, okay? Let me be unequivocal here. If Bowl TV will not give Mike Flanagan a home, Sweep the Rack will gladly welcome Mike Flanagan, okay? Let's be clear, all right? Let's be clear about it. Mike, I saw this comment from Lucas. Lucas, what's up? He said, people don't understand what the grind is like doing bowling stream week after week until they do it. It's tough. Can you paint the picture for our people of, like, you know, what are your days like? What are your weeks like? What are the finer points of the grind of doing the bowling streaming thing?
Well, the toughest part is if you're somebody who cares, which is, you know, somebody like me who cares, your stress level is very high. Especially when at any given time your oxygen can be taken out from underneath you, which is the internet connection coming into the bowl, right? I told somebody one time, it would be like, imagine if somebody called the PBA and said, hey, we're going to have this event, and we've got everything you need. We just don't have pin setters. We've got pins, we've got lanes, we can walk the ball back up to you and everything. We just don't have pin setters, but that's okay. We got everything else we need. That'd be a very difficult tournament. The pin setter is our internet, right? And you got to have it. So that's the first thing. The second thing is all of our equipment going to work? Is it all going to talk to one another? Are we going to be able to NDI, which is bringing in feeds from other channels? Sometimes they don't want to work. All those sorts of things is what's going on. And then you work with a crew. And as this thing has evolved, you have a larger crew. And I was kind of the point guy. So I'm also dad, right? Working with younger people. And I love working with younger people. But if somebody's like, you know, even when it's time to go to lunch, hey, everybody good with Mexican? Oh, no, Mexican doesn't agree with my stomach and I got to stay up late tonight. Okay, well, is Italian okay, right? Like, these are all the things that you're working on the road with a group of people, and you've only got so many rental cars. You're trying to get people to the rooms. You're making sure people wake up on time. You're making sure people come in. And then stay on task, and you've got your live reads that come in, all these different sorts of things. So you've got your graphic designer, you're a lead on air play-by-play, you're a logistics guy, you're also checking the scores, and the chat room's telling us, hey, this score's wrong in game five for Barnes. Then you like put down your headset and walk over to Tony Lanning and say, hey, there was a score input wrong. And he's like, oh, thanks a lot, man, because you're working together, right? Or he might say, hey, by the way, somebody called in and said this is wrong with your stream. Okay, well, thank you, Tony, or whoever, right? So you just have so many different things going on. It's like you're wearing like 10 hats. And then you're also trying to make sure that what you're saying on air isn't going to offend anybody, right? Whether if it's the audience, a certain group, or the people that you work for, right?
There goes our spot to Mike. We will never be able to do a Bull TV stream ever.
So there's just a lot compiling. There's a lot compiling when you're doing this gig. And, you know, what happens if you wake up and you just don't feel good? And let's say you're having a bad day, or you get some bad news. You get a call from home that your printer doesn't work in your apparel business. And now you're going to have a bunch of customers emailing you about where's my shirts, right? All that stuff starts to weigh on you and compound on you because I take on so much. But I do want to say for a second that the guys that are out there, one thing that has kind of pissed me off throughout this whole Mike's not there thing is it's kind of been unfair to the guys that are working out there because they are my boys. Okay. Chase Kaufman, Brian Kane, Craig Elliott, Tom Hess, Curtis Von Kruger, Patrick Martinez, and of course, JT, they're all my homies. They're all my buddies. They've all done something for me at one time or another, you know, not on air, that they're my friends. They actually genuinely care about me. Emil Williams Jr. as well. And you know, the Ben Davis thing, okay. You know, I'm going to say something here and I might get in trouble for it, but when a guy like Ben Davis gets sent over on whether or not, well, should he be included with Bull TV, you know, Jason Thomas sent me an email with the demo reel for this guy and everything. It says, Mike, I want your opinion. Do you think this guy would be worth it for bowling? Like, do you think we should possibly bring this guy on? And I watched his demo reel and I'm like, holy cow, this guy comes from MMA, reminded me like WWE or something too. And I was like, man, if we could get this guy in bowling, put him with somebody knowledgeable about bowling, he could bring a lot of energy. I don't know if he could do it for 12 hours a day. Okay. That's impossible, but I like Ben. And many people don't know that we brought Ben to Ron Moore's event, the senior shootouts in Vegas. And he worked alongside with me and I was teaching him how to keep score. I had him with one of those printouts where he was writing down the scores and keeping score, and he would compare it to the South Point scoreboards. And after a couple of games, he was able to keep score. Then I let him do, because I was the lead on the ground there, I let him do two or three step ladders. I think it was two step ladders with Tom Hess. And I thought he did an amazing job for never calling bowling. Like, I thought he did a really good job. And he developed this love affair with Bo Gergen. Like, he just fell in love with Bo Gergen. Bo Gergen, where's Bo Gergen? And, you know, he had that kind of nutty, kind of not so professional, but fun. And I'm like, man, this guy's going to be great. And then when I didn't work the Masters and he goes in there and, you know, they put him with the other Ben Glasscock, who's another great guy. But those two guys together, I think everybody would have thought, man, they should be with somebody that knows a little more bowling than putting those two together for a squad. And they just got completely hammered. Like, I mean, not hammered because they were drinking, but hammered on the internet. And I didn't think it was fair because those guys all actually work long days. Those guys, I think Ben Davis, if he's around long enough, he could be very good for bowling. You just got to put him with the right person. But I will tell you, these guys getting completely blasted because I wasn't there, I did feel kind of bad about that because they are great people. And I do think that they do a good job.
Yeah, but it's not about whether they're great people. It's about whether they're you know, fully suited to fill the role that they're being asked to fill. You know, so yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's a tough position to be in, I'll say, because you got to know bowling. You kind of have to know your stuff to do that. Like you kind of have to know it inside and out too. You can't know it a little bit. You got to really know it. You know, and you really know it. And that's why I think a lot of people enjoyed, you know, you doing the commentary, because it was somebody who really understood the game at a very high level and understood the nuances and understood the things that the fans that are tuning in, who are mostly hardcore bowling fans themselves, notice and take note of, etc. Go ahead, Rob. I'm sorry.
No, Mike. Look, Flanagan was a bowler, man. I mean, we played juniors against each other. I mean, Mike, and you know, that's why Tom Hess is good at what he does, right? Like, because he's a bowler, he knows bowling. So to like, even you're seeing it on the broadcast, like even this week with Fanta, like Fanta is a professional broadcaster, but he has some moments where you're like, if he was a bowler, he probably wouldn't have said what he said, right? And I think that's the hardest thing. And I think like Rob Stone on top of that is another one who he wasn't a bowler. Like he's learning still the bowling part of it. And that's why like Randy's done what he's done for so long, because he understands bowling and then he kind of put it together with the entertainment part. So, I mean, yes, I think it was a mistake. I think the timing of it was bad with them putting Ben Davis and Glasscock on the like day you were like, people were starting to ask where you were. And then on top of that, they're making basic mistakes like calling Parker Bone's son by the wrong last name, whose last name is synonymous with the all-time greats. Like, you make mistakes like that and people are going to light you up on the internet. There is no mercy on the internet. And people, our emails and our text messages and phones, I mean, it was lighting up. It was like Christmas. I remember being at the gym and being like, what the hell is going on? All of a sudden, it's like, put on Bowl TV. You got to watch worst of the week, worst of the year, worst of the decade. I'm like, holy crap, what are they doing over there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've mispronounced names as well. I understand Bond versus Bone and all. I had dinner with a couple of folks that came through St. Louis that worked for a bowling company, and that was the first thing they wanted to talk to me about is really Bond versus Bone. And I'm like, all right, I spelled my name wrong on a graphic before. Like, I mean, everybody makes mistakes, but I understand. I understand where everybody was coming from.
Well, these are bowling. These are diehards. You know the Bowl TV chat. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. and I love that. I love being on there because it's like people, they are so serious. And it's, you know, and you, man, you say a name like that. Could you imagine if a UFC went down and they pronounced Chuck Liddell's name wrong? It would be a massacre. Like, they would choke the guy out literally on TV who was calling that on UFC. And I'm just saying that's kind of what it was like. But I just want you to know what was going on a fan's perspective when all this was going down. I can't imagine what your phone was going down, Mike, with people reaching out to you going, where the hell are you? You need to, like, the bat signal was going up for Flanagan for like a minute, I think.
All right. I want to talk to Rob for a second, Mike. And if you want to respond, you can.
Yeah.
But sure. I'm just going to talk to Rob.
Yeah.
Rob, I want to highlight this comment, okay? Sean in the chat. What's up, Sean? Says, I miss your interactions with the chat. I have commented multiple times in the last 2 weeks. Crickets. The chat just ain't fun anymore, okay? Another person made the same point. Somebody else in the chat brought up the Pete Weber interview, okay? And, you know, like, Rob, if there's two main things – first of all, his exit was abrupt. Okay, I'm going to say that. And number two, if there's two main things that I've noticed about Bowl TV that have changed dramatically since Flanagan left, it's number one, they are not interacting with the chat anymore. And number two, they are not really bringing guests in the booth. Okay, so, you know, listen, I'm just making my own observations as a fan. Okay. That's one of the things I enjoyed about watching Bowl TV. I enjoyed the interviews. I thought that Pete Weber interview was like, that's the reason you subscribe to Bowl TV. That's the reward you get for tuning in and watching for various hours, is that at some point they bring in a legend. And you know what? Maybe he says some things that people aren't so okay with or don't agree with. But he's Pete Weber. He could say what he wants. Okay, so it doesn't really matter what you think. And the fans enjoy it, you know. And in terms of the game, it's not bad to have a controversial conversation every once in a while. Okay, so those are two of the big things that I noticed after Mike's departure. You know,
I have something, Mike,
seemed very Chad-like to me. I'm going to say, all right, I'm gonna leave it at that. Go ahead, Rob.
So the other thing that I noticed too is, look, like, 12 hours to time fill is a lot of time, right? It's crazy how much, like, I did it for a couple hours at the Agent Ong Open where I streamed, and you literally have to, like, you can't talk all action of what's going on in the lanes. Like, there's got to be side chat, Mike. There's got to be, like, even if it's like, hey, like, yo, I ate at this fire pizza place for lunch, right? If it's just even engaging outside of bowling talk, right? Me and you do that all the time. How many times have I talked about, like, me fighting with my dog or my in the dog park with people, right? Just like personal shit, right? I noticed when Mike left, there has only been on the lane calls, right? There isn't a lot of side chatter going on. There isn't a lot of, like, you know, interesting kind of like side banter, right? Where me and you will talk about bowling, but we'll also talk about some of the craziness that happens to us outside the bowling center. So I think that's the other thing too that has kind of stopped when Mike left. And yeah, like, I mean, we need some of that back. But I mean, Mike's doesn't sound like he's coming back anytime soon. So we're kind of stuck with what we got, I guess.
Rob, Mike, as bowlers who came up in the game, right, and spent hours upon hours in bowling alleys as kids, where did we hang out a lot of the time? Where did you spend a lot of those hours inside the bowling alley when you weren't bowling?
Oh, the pro shop.
Game room or the pro shop?
The pro shop. Okay, the pro shop. And you know what? When you were in the pro shop, you often talked about bowling, and the subject was often focused on bowling. But some of the funniest and best conversations and most memorable conversations that I had in the pro shop didn't even involve bowling. Okay. It wasn't even about bowling. And, you know, that was kind of the vibe that I felt Mike was bringing to Bowl TV, sort of like a pro shop-ish type vibe. Like if you were hanging in the pro shop watching Bowl TV.
Yeah, like the Scoop the Rack vibe.
Yeah.
Like
this us, is, like what we this, did. This is who you would want. You know, Mike would be a good guy to have come walk in the shop and sit there for 12 hours and watch it with you. But, you know, I've noticed these changes. So, all right, we'll leave it at that. Mike, anything you want to respond to, add, you know, retort, et cetera, based from what we said?
It's all subjective, right? Like, just because you guys like it doesn't mean that most of the audience likes that inside stuff, okay? It's all subjective. The three of us, if we took a personality test when it comes to bowling, we would all probably be in the same quadrant, right? We'd all be hanging out in the same area. So it's easy for you guys to say, I like what you were doing, right? But, you know, they had some stats, like very small amount of the subscribers even chat in general, right? Mm-hmm. There's many of them that just sit there and listen to the thing. So if we're on some sort of tangent about how to save some money on your car insurance by switching your deductible to 0%, you know, which I did do on the air multiple times. And I actually had some people come up and thank me and say, thank you so much. I hit a deer, Mike. And boy, was that a great $31 I spent every year. But, you know, I would just always come up with weird stuff, right? Well, if you're trying to take your network to the next level, I could understand that you're going to move in more of a direction of professionalism and not talking about, you know, weird stuff. But I always kind of enjoyed nitwittery is what I call it, right? There's a morning show in St. Louis that's been on the air for I think 20 years now. It's called The Morning After. And it's got a cult following of people that watch this show and listen to this podcast show or whatever. And they are so off the rails. It's a sports talk show, but they don't even talk about sports anymore. They talk about anything and everything. And they get these sponsors, and the sponsors get return on their investment because they do the support the sponsor thing. And they have more, it's a very, very, very well-maintained show that has a very great ecosystem sponsorship wise. And the guy that runs the show, his name's Tim McKern, and he always talks about how he's the greatest and he never makes a mistake and he's awesome and his dad's amazing and all these different sorts of things. And the whole show, the inside joke is, this guy calls himself the greatest, but it's an inside joke, right? And I kind of sort of took parts of these things that influenced me, Dan Patrick, Bob Costas, Vin Scully, and this stupid morning show in St. Louis that I've loved forever, and I try to incorporate it into what I do throughout a 16-hour day of live streaming or whatever it is. And when I say I'm the best, I've never made a mistake, I'm the greatest, I'll raise my voice kind of like this, guys. Hey, let's go over here and take a look at lanes 5 and 6. Oh, look, there's 200-300 games about to happen. Just this goofy, crazy stuff. A lot of that stuff is taken from my influences, like The Morning After in St. Louis. And Kevin, who's always in your chat, Kevin Hebert, he watches that show religiously too, and he's around my age. And he even texted me before the show tonight and said, can you get in a TMA reference tonight on the show? And they do this thing called Free Dotem, where they started yelling it at professional golf tournaments, you know, just like Baba Booey. And, you know, every once in a while in the chat, I'll see somebody type free Dotem on Bull TV. And I have to text Tim McKernan and say, hey, Tim, you even got free Dotem in the Bull TV chat. And I print all their merch for their morning show. So it all kind of comes full circle. I've got these influence and these successful things that I follow and I'm around. And I try to bring some of that into bowling. You know, I saw a couple of notes here in comments in your chat here that were kind of making me laugh. First of all, Lucas Wiseman is giving you the hardest time in the world, Mike. That microphone needs to be closer to your mouth. It's like on another planet.
No, because then you start hearing it breathe.
Yeah, and it's too loud. It's too loud. Yeah, I have to manage it.
Okay, there you go, Lucas.
That's one of our inside jokes around here is my headset and my microphone.
Yeah, he's like a helicopter pilot. Everybody
hates it, but I've stuck with it.
Yo, let me tell you something, okay? There is no comparison between me and Flanagan, okay? Flanagan is you could call it a professional, like, streamer, like, in all sense of it, right? Digital content creator, streamer. Me, I do this shit once a week, maybe twice a week. I work a full-time job. I've been kind of improving this for 5 years. So, you know, this is definitely no comparison. Mike is definitely on another level of this than I am. And I was just saying I had a personal experience sitting in the booth. So I got a little bit of a taste of what Mike was doing 12 hours a day for months straight.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I learned this a long time ago. If you do 1,000 hours of anything, you get pretty good at it. So if all of a sudden I went and played tennis for 1,000 hours and said, hey, you guys want to play some tennis? I'd probably kick your ass, right? Because I put 1,000 hours into it. I put a lot of time into streaming. I can't even think about going back and listening to myself in 2011 calling bowling. It's like nails on a chalkboard. You know, oh my God, I don't want to listen to that at all. The other comment, though, before I forget about it, is there was a young lady in your chat here that brought up that she was bowling women's nationals and she was taught. Yeah, that's it. Dawn here. I remember this specifically. She was talking about bowling in an event and the people in the chat were like giving her the hardest time. And I'm like, hold on a second, everybody. She's getting ready to bowl women's nationals and has a legit question or comment here. Give her a break. And I guess that resonates with her, that she still remembers me sticking up, you know. And you talk about
people, Mike.
You said something about the guests, Mike. You said something about having guests in the booth. I always tried to have an open booth policy. You know, for whatever reason there, for the longest time, the prior commentator crew or people in charge of live streaming, whether it be Extra Frame or Flow Bowling, got into the habit of putting their broadcast booth in a closet somewhere way off the beaten path, and they couldn't even see the bowling. They were just watching the monitor. And I said, I don't want to do this. We can't see, breathe, touch what's going on. And I want to have a microphone at the end where the bowlers come up and grab it and just start talking if they wanted to. Like DJ Archer at the US Open had the microphone was down there, and they're not supposed to be able, they're not supposed to be on their phones, do anything. And DJ, they were so hard, right? Because they're bowling on the same bay, and you know, and he just picked up the microphone and started talking to me. I couldn't talk back to him because that's like against the rules. But he just started talking to me as if he was having a conversation with me about, Mike, they are so hard right now. It's like the Masters at Augusta. And you know, that little stuff, these player relationships with these guys being able to do that. If any players are listening to this right now, and if you had a relationship with me and you pick up a microphone and you don't feel like you have a relationship with the guys that are already in the booth, you should keep doing that even if I'm not there, because that's what the fans want. I can't tell you how many times somebody would come over, like a Jason Couch or a Mike Albee or whoever it may be, and they're just hanging out by the booth. And I would take my headset off, turn down the microphone and say, have a seat. And then I'd look at my teammates and go, you got Jason Couch for the next game. And I'm out of there because they don't want to listen to me. They want to listen to Jason Couch. He's a Hall of Famer and he's going to give you way more than I possibly can. I got plenty hours on the air this week. I'm good. So that's what I have to say about what you were saying with that.
No doubt. Have we discussed the milk carton of Mike Flanagan enough tonight? Should we move on?
We should. The hashtag free Flanagan is going to trend after this. I don't know what that means, but it's kind of funny.
Okay.
And I should say, you know, somebody said here, Mike, what are your businesses? Okay, I haven't heard you plug them. And I keep that. I don't really promote my businesses, but I still live stream bowling tournaments on YouTube on Inside Bowling. We're still trying to get to 100,000 subscribers. We're at like 86,000. We put out instructional content, and I'm actually doing bowling ball review videos. So make sure you subscribe to Inside Bowling on YouTube. That's one thing that we do.
Ball review videos, patch piracy. Are you involved in patch piracy? You are.
Brunswick and Motive have been very good to me. They send me one of every release, and I've done a terrible, terrible job of actually getting out there and putting these videos.
Mike's reaction. Look at Mike's reaction. Dude, every time someone gets free stuff and Mike does it, he gives.
I'm going to drop my address after the show. So,
you know. I'm a pro shop owner now, though, Mike.
Feel free. Yeah.
And you can get all your favorite goods at Inside Bowling if you don't have a pro shop. You're already seeing
one patch pirate to another. Flanagan, my brother Jeff, who's the king, I think, of the patch pirates, he's coming in.
Lucky I even let you come on here knowing that now.
I love Jeff.
All right, Mike, you ready to talk about some bowling, some TV bowling?
Let's do it. So where do you want to start? You want to start because the World Championship show is set.
Yeah, we'll talk.
You want to run that down real quick?
No, because we'll set up a nice little review at the end for the World Championship.
Okay.
The 9-man stepladder, at least better than 18-man stepladder, I guess. At least they cut it in half. I mean, I love to see what the odds of the 9-seed to win. Which I think is like Mike Martell, who got and sneaked in over Belmo with the last game. Anyway, let's talk Cheetah, because we had a first-time winner, Mike. 20-year-old, came close to beating the Norm Duke age by a couple years. I don't think that record's ever going to be broke, to be honest with you. Big Mike, where do you want to start with that Dio Bernard show of him making it look easy, looking very uninterested in bowling? While he was bowling, I mean, just completely robot, like just did his business, struck a lot, and won. So where do you want to start, Big Mike?
Well, I want to start by telling everybody that I had Dio Bernard to win, baby.
Oh, there Come you on. Go. I know. There you
had
go.
Had Dio Bernard to win at like plus 550, okay?
I got a beef with Bet Rivers, by the way, Mike. Bet Rivers wouldn't let me put my bet in, and I work on an Indian reservation. So in order for me to bet before I have to do it in the morning before I leave for work. So I put the bet in and I went to work and the bet never went through, I guess. By the time I got home, the show already started from work. And I'm like, oh, probably Bernard ain't going to win anyway because I put money on him and of course he wins. So Bet Rivers, you owe me a bunch of money because the bet never went through and I should have won. But all right, let's start with this show, Mike.
I had Dio Bernard at plus 550, hit that. And then in game one, I took game one, if you remember, was BJ Moore against Keplinger.
And the Stone 8 match.
I know. I took BJ Moore and the over in that game. And yeah, I did not win because of the Stone 8s. So that was that was the difference there.
I'm going to throw this to Flanagan. I don't want to go match to match or else we're going to be here all night. I think we should just talk the show in general.
Okay.
I'm going to bring it to Flanagan. What were your thoughts on this show? What did you leave the show thinking and feeling? Any like perspective from your end?
I just thought the scoring pace for that event out of the get-go was just extremely high, right? And you know, they said it on the show the other night that, you know, EJ's probably going to beat Belmo's all-time average for a season. So that's pretty crazy. So seeing the people that made the show, whenever it's a score fest, you get different faces. Sometimes that can happen. And that's what I saw from it. This Mikey Schlaubach guy, I watched him bowl the RPI. I was out there calling that action and I called him like a mini EJ Tackett. I mean, he's a bigger version, of course, because he's taller. But if you really watch him bowl, he really throws it like EJ. They're both on Motive staff and both from Indiana, I believe. So I don't think that's the last we're going to see of him. And then Alec Keplinger, obviously Sandra Joe Shirey's son, that guy, I know Barnes has backed him in the past. And when I hear of a guy like Barnes backing a bowler, I think, wow, this guy's got some talent, right? So I thought that was really cool to see him do that. Kind of reminds me when Marshall Kent made his first show at the World Series of Bowling way back the year that Parker Bone won the World Championship, I believe was when Marshall made his first show. Finished second because of a 7-10 on the right lane with a defiant soul. He was using different ball on each lane. But I thought Dio Bernard, all I think about is when I was his age, 20 years old, where was I at in my life? And what if I would have won a PBA title? how would that feel, Rob? I'm sure you could put yourself in those shoes. If you're going to Saginaw and, you know, all of a sudden you bowl this event and you win, right?
The groupies, the bowling groupies. Yeah, I'd be hanging out in every bowling bar I could find on my way home.
And his dad being there, you know, the Bones and the Barnes get all this dad-son notoriety. Well, we got some father-son stuff going on here. Of course, the McCunes as well. I can't leave them out. But I thought it was cool, and I think Dio's a good kid. All my interactions with that kid has just been very humbling and just very nice. So kudos to him. And I think Cheetah Championship is one where you kind of get some first-time winners over the years.
I had a note here. I took notes. I took notes on everything because that's the way I watch the shows. And just two notes I want to share with the people. Dio is Freddy for the Cheddar. I'm announcing it. The kid is Freddy for the Cheddar. He's 20 years old. He's that cool, calm, and composed on the show. Sick, sick performance for a kid. Oh, and then as soon as I wrote that note, he went big four. He went big four. I'm not even
people kidding. People are going to hate my take on this, and I'm going to get a ton of heat for what I'm going to say here.
Oh, God, I know what you're going to say.
So a few things, okay? They're bowling on one of the highest scoring patterns of the year. Dio had the hole left to himself, okay? If you don't think – if anyone out there doesn't think that was an advantage for him, extreme advantage for him. The kid had room to miss left, room to miss right. He was using a urethane, right? He didn't have a lot of change to deal with. So it's a lot – it's easy to be Freddy for the Cheddar when you have a lot of room in a lot of area, not a lot of transition to deal with, okay? So that's my first, right? I'm not taking credit away from Dio. Like, he bowled it. He earned it. But – It seemed like it was just a little bit too easy in a sense, right? So that's my first take, okay? The second is if I was 20 and I was on the show, the craziness, Flanagan, you knew me very well when I was younger, so to Big Mike, the craziness that it would have been going on with me winning these matches, steamrolling people, whatever it was, like it would have been must-see TV. I would have been out of my mind crazy, like, you know, God only knows I might have been riding the ball return, like Happy Gilmore riding the bull. Like, who knows at this point? I just wouldn't want to see more emotion. I just won't want to see more, like, looking like he wanted to be there. Like, he just looked so uninterested, like a teenager that was forced to, like, mow the lawn. Like, he just didn't look like he wanted to be there. Now, I know that's not the case, but from a fan's perspective, I wanted to see just him be a little bit more, like, emotional. Now we'll get to the next night, which was an amazing night. I love that night. The other part of it was I want to talk about Schleybach. I think I want to nickname Happy to Be There, okay? Because that's what he looked like. He looked like he was happy to be there, right? I wanted to see more like I want to win. I'm here to win. He looked like he was just happy to be there. Now that's from a fan's perspective. I don't know the kid, but I wanted him to show a little bit more like, F you, I'm running over you, this is my show to win. Instead, he just kind of was happy, laughing, just kind of played it off like he was just, you know, like, oh, this is great, I'm just going to, like, lose and, you know, wave to the fans and leave. So, I don't know. That was my really perspective. And then the BJ Moore 8-pins. That was just nasty. I felt so bad for BJ. Ugh, just complete nastiness. Should have won. And I think BJ would have went a little bit further in that ladder. So
yeah, I had another note. Yeah. Dio looks unstoppable against Schleybach, who seemed to just be there to enjoy the moment. And then the final note I want to share, no one brought this up. Marshall Kent flagged the head pin left on a show again. Can we talk about this? He seemed to allude to it being move-based. I mean, he could have been trying to play a different part of the lane, I guess you could say. But that's, you know, why would you think that the ball is going to hold that way, throwing it there on Cheetah? I wouldn't imagine, right? I don't know. To me, it kind of looked like a poorly executed shot. He was trying to get the ball right deep down the lane the whole time. He didn't get anywhere near deep down right where he was trying to get it, break point wise, and run away. 1-3-6. I mean, any comment on that?
I got one for you. So, you know, Bill O'Neill talks about when he bowls on television, he tries to keep his angles as straight as possible. Norm Duke also tried to do the same thing, and Chris Barnes was the first guy to really be noticeable trying to keep your angles a lot straighter on television. Then Fagan retooled his game to do the same thing. Marshall Kent has yet to buy into that, and at times he looks completely like, who is this guy? How can this guy possibly be made the TV show with these couple of weird adjustments that he makes on TV? I think Marshall would maybe have maybe two or three more wins if his strategy on TV was more like Bill O'Neill, Fagan, and Barnes.
We also had some daps between the players on this show. 3-bet-1, what's good? I was not a fan either. 3-bet-1, I could do without the hand slaps from the players in between. Kyle Stark in the chat, you're gonna get worst of the week, bro. He says, you act like you never cut it short on a short pattern. Am I a professional, bro? Am I a professional? Like, I cut it short on a short pattern every week, bro. Dude,
I've done it many times.
On a podcast and talk about it. I'm a hack. What else do you want to know? But we're not talking about that. We're talking about professionals. That's like asking a sports commentator who says Tom Brady threw a bad pass if he throws a bad pass. No, it doesn't work that way. All right.
Dude, people are going to be fit too about Dio's personality. I get it, right? I get the kid's very humble. He's very reserved, doesn't show a lot of emotion. And I also understand that's a lot of keys to success on TV, where you have to keep your emotions in check. I get it. You see a lot of the players in the career, the history of bowling, had zero emotion, got up there, did the job. They won their titles, right? Guys like Walter Ray, right, who would show emotion every once in a while. He did, but he would be able to keep his emotions in check. Scroggins, right? I mean, guys like – but, look, I'm just coming at it as a fan from an entertainment purpose, and I just wanted to see a little bit more, like, oomph out of him. But thankfully, we have Kevin Williams and Packy to thank for an amazing match they had the next night. So, Mike – Big Mike, that's my transition.
Hey, Rob, real quick, just something to think about with these players with showing emotion, like you in the front row cheering for Bill with the plaid shirt on, World Series of Bowling. I get all that, but these guys also, it's almost like they just got their first big corporate job and they're going into their first board meeting. So if they go into their first board meeting, the last thing they want to do is make any of the brass in there or the seasoned veterans pissed off at them, right? And now that we have this PBA league, okay, Andrew Anderson ran out a shot at Woodland Bowl at the World Championship, I think. I don't remember the event. And he didn't get picked in the PBA league. And one of the reasons was Andrew Anderson lacked respect for the other players because he ran it out. If Dio Bernard wants to be in the PBA league, and if he's riding the ball return like a horse or a bull against his opponent, I don't think Norm Duke's going to pick him for the Dallas Strikers. Just something else to keep in mind.
Hey, I get this politics, right? And I get, and look, anybody knows corporate America, it's me and how to act professional. Because guess what? Like, I have to be like that at my job. I'm not going around cursing and yelling and whatever. I just want to see some future young, like, talent that is not afraid to, like, get it. You know what I mean? And I still think, and me and Mike talked about this off air a couple days ago, Anthony Simonson is the future of the PBA, in my opinion. He is the best. The kid doesn't care what he flips off people. He's not afraid to be emotional. He's the most talented PBA player, and he's about, what, like 26, 27? And he's to the point where, trust me, he's getting drafted in the league. So, you know, I just want to see a little bit more emotions out of the young kids. I want to show or hope that there's a little bit of Pete Weber in some of these kids, right? Like,
I do too. It's just probably not going to happen with many of them coming out of collegiate ranks, and at the college ranks, they're teaching them to be even keeled. Every shot's just like the next one, you know. So anyway,
I was going to say it, like, I get it. It's such a bad take because it goes against what they need to do to win, and he knows that. He knows that. It's such a disingenuous take because it's like saying, well, I want them to act in a way that's detrimental to them accomplishing the goal they want to accomplish. Like, What are you talking about? Like, if you would have made a PBA show, Rob, not only would they have wanted to shank you, okay? Like, somebody would have came up with to you with a ball carver, okay, or one of those tape insert knives, right? And they would have like ganked you.
But people would have loved me. People would have hated me. But people would watch.
No, but okay? You also, we all know that quote. One shot would have been 10 miles an hour slower than the next one. It would have been
120.
Watch out crossover.
I'd have bowled 120.
You would have been so amped up. You would have been so amped
but
up.
That was like, the beauty of P. Weber, Mike, in his prime. P. Weber was able to do that and still win.
And there's not many that can. That's what I'm saying.
You know? I know I said it's a crazy take, and I know people are going to get on me, whatever, the chat and all them. You know, it is. I don't care because I'm still looking at it as an entertainment point of it. But the PBA showed what it could do on a Pacquiao Kevin Williams match, the next match, okay? That's what I want to see every match, right? I want to see great bowling, but I want to see them, like, going at each other a little bit, showing some emotion, getting the crowd involved. That crowd was dead, Mike. I'm sorry. It was dead. And they were trying to do whatever they could to get the crowd amped up. And, you know, they were struggling to do that. But, man, what a match. Let's transition to Scorpion, okay? Because I could talk about this was the Belmo versus the Lefty show, Mike.
Yeah, that was over quick.
That was over quick. And I'm going to, you know, throw this to Flanagan. Flanagan, what were your thoughts on this show? All two-hander show, four lefty two-handers, one, obviously, Belmo two-hander. Flanagan, what were your thoughts here? Like, what'd you think overall on this one?
Yeah, I really, if I was betting it, I would have bet Belmo on this show. I would have just bet him to run this ladder, right? And, you know, one thing that I was kind of noticing is these guys are thumping holes.
Mm.
Did you guys hear in that? You hear Jesper's ball thumping down the lane?
I did.
I don't know. I mean, and I know it happens all the time, but when I was bowling back in the day, here I sound like an old man, but I remember if my hole started thumping, that wasn't good, right? Especially when they get tighter down lane. But I heard thumping down the lane. That was something that really I noticed. The other thing that we haven't brought up yet, and I'll take this and let you guys talk more about the show in particular. But this right lane every night being a tighter lane down lane, right? I feel like that's a good thing for the integrity of the tournament format. What I mean by that is, if you qualified as a higher seed, you got lane choice. So for you to come on to the show and know that there is one lane that is worse than the other, it actually benefits you to qualify higher. And many, many times that top seed is at a disadvantage, right? So I think this one lane being tougher than the other helps balance out the whole number one seed thing. So that was something I was thinking about during the show. The other thing on that show, for me personally, when you know all these guys, it's hard to have a rooting interest, right? It's hard to be a fan of the show because you like everybody. And the thing I was talking to Kim about when we were watching it is, I'm like, well, Belmo's one of the guys that called me, asking me where I was and that he misses me. And is there anything he can do for me? Right. And I'm like, well, I want him to win. Jesper opened a case of Leaf cards on my YouTube channel, and he's like one of the coolest guys out there. So I wanted him to win. Kevin Williams, I stream his event in Springfield every year. I wanted him to win. I print all of Packy's merch for the house. I wanted him to win. And Matt Russo lives in St. Louis and has been in two videos on my YouTube channel and is the nicest guy in the world. So I was sitting there just like, I can't root for anybody, just from a personal perspective, bringing you into my living room. And I was happy to see Russo win. And with Russo's dominance here, reminds me of Tom Doherty's dominance down in Florida the COVID year.
That's a good comparison. In his home house,
Doherty. I had Packy to win here, just mainly based on odds. It was plus 325, and I thought, give me a lefty at plus 325, and I'll take that. Didn't work out for me there. I put a couple game bets in during the show, and I actually did very well on this show. First game, I had Jesper over Belmonte and under 460 and a half parlayed 20 to win 95. Got that at 5 to 1. Okay, because they had Belmo as the favorite there. Then I mentioned before I caught Jesper's ball kind of reaction kind of going away, and there was a match earlier that leading up to the finals. They were in the match play of Scorpion. Jesper and Kevin Williams bowled each other, and it looked like whatever Kevin Williams was doing with the resin that he was using was not making Jesper's look very good throughout the match. Okay, and Williams beat Jesper in that match. So I took Kevin Williams three different ways. I took him straight. I took him plus the pins because he was the dog. And I took Williams to win parlayed with the under 445, which just hit because Jesper went to the resin ball at the end.
We
of the
talk
game.
About that, Mike. Like, yeah, because I've been chomping to talk about this match. I found it very interesting that Randy and Fanta were both talking about how Jesper has been labeled a one-trick pony, and people have been giving him criticism in regards to only being able to succeed with urethane. And I found it interesting that while they were talking about that, it was very obvious from any bowler who knows ball reactions and knows just what to look at that Jesper needed to switch out of that urethane. And I get if the match was close. I get if it was within 10, 15 pins. But as soon as Kevin's threw that triple in the middle of the match, or you know, I think he threw four in a row at one time during the middle of the match, and Jesper was still flat sevening, I think Jesper needed to get out of that urethane 3 to 4 frames quicker, right? And this is the continue. We see this from Jesper on a lot of different shows, especially when there's a lot of lefties on the show and there's more transition. Jesper just seems to be like in jail with his urethane, and he's just not quick enough yet to get out of it to move to urethane, to move to performance. And I think once Jesper picks that up quicker and realizes, hey, my urethane isn't right, I need to get to performance, he'll start winning more on TV. But if he doesn't get out and he still continues to want to use that urethane and try to jam it in, he's not going to beat Russo and Packy and Kevin on these lefty shows. It's just not going to happen when you're throwing performance standing about an hour right of him,
especially with the new urethane. I mean, I think that's clear too, right? And Rob, and Mike, let me say something. If I knew what was going to happen, shouldn't he have known what's going to happen? Shouldn't his ball reps have known what's going to happen? I mean, I'm a hack sitting at home watching. I'm a hack who watches a lot of bowling, okay? And I knew I was ultra confident that Kevin Williams is going to win this game because the urethane look is going away and Jesper's not going to get out of it and Williams is going to throw resin. It's going to continue to get progressively worse as the game goes on. And that's exactly what happened until he was basically forced to throw the resin.
It's a good point, Kyle says. That's why D-Ron's strategy was so brilliant. Blake wants to know if that's a ball rep thing. I'd like to throw that to Flanagan and see what your thoughts on that.
Can't be.
Look, I will say this. All right, and I am not a numbers guy. I am not a pro shop guy. I've never gotten into the drilling of bowling balls. And I've never gotten into the really real technical side of these balls. But a long time ago, you know, I used to soak up this knowledge when the hot spot or the triangle on the Nighthawk, which is the mass bias location on the ball.
Nighthawk.
And I was told if you put it at a 10:30 with the mass bias to the right of your thumb, it created this mid lane. If you stacked it up and down in a 12 o'clock position, that was the back end. And then if you put it at 130, like a label drill, that was called the arc, right? And your bowling ball would give 33% of the energy in all three parts of the lane and these different things. And I know we have advanced so far beyond that. And that is so old school, right? But I also know that if you put your pin closer to your positive axis point, that it pretty much tames down the ball reaction. And there's also a such thing as drilling the differential out of a bowling ball, okay, which kind of deadens and kills the ball, okay? So the thing for me is with this IQ 78, ball is Storm also has an IQ Tour, which is a very calm, reactive bowling ball. And then you can adjust the surface, which is, I believe, 80% of the reaction of the ball. They always say it's the tires, right, on the car. I just wonder, and I don't know if this has been tried or not. I'm sure it probably has. And look, this would be like a ball rep saying, Flanagan, here's how you should stream a bowling tournament. So what I'm saying right now could be completely talking out of my ass.
But that's what I do every week.
But I would try everything under the sun possible for a guy like Jesper or a guy like Buttriff to move these positive axis points. I believe that does help deaden a bowling ball to where you could go from an IQ 78 and then go into an IQ Tour. Maybe it's some other ball. Maybe it's a tropical something, or it's a hustle or something like that, some lower end ball. And I do believe there's got to be a ball progression there. And if they haven't figured it out yet, they've got the minds within each one of these ball companies to bring them into their test facility, try to replicate some of these patterns. And I'm sure the players and the ball companies could work this out to where they could practice this and keep working at it. There's got to be some sort of physical thing they can do with these bowling balls to help these guys out when they're on television, because I said a little while ago on this podcast that the straighter is greater on television. You guys were ripping on Marshall for what he was doing. And we talked about Bill and we talked about Barnes and Fagan and these guys going straighter. So Jesper, it's smarter to stay straight. Doesn't need to be opening up the lane and hooking it, but there's got to be something else he could go to. Right. So, and they just haven't figured it out.
Let me ask you, like, why not just, look, I'm with you with the technical side stuff, right? I worked in a pro shop for a couple of years, right? That doesn't make me an expert by any means. But why not just learn how to, I mean, he knows how to stand right and throw it left, like Packy or Kevin. Like, why not just go to some A-Sim, like a big ball, and just move right and just feed it into the, like, track like the other guys were doing when that ball goes away? Like, to me, that's the move, is get to something strong asymmetrical with some surface, maybe jumping 5 to 10 right, move your eyes, and then just feed it into that spot. And look, it's easy for us to sit on the couch and talk about what you could do during a TV show, right? Like, I get it. It's hard to switch out of a urethane mid-TV, mid-match. But I think once Jesper figures it out and how to do that, he's going to win. Until that happens, if he's not the only lefty like Dio Bernard was on his side, and he could just feed his urethane and not have to deal with any transition, he's going to lose. He's going to lose to Matt Russo and Packy and Kevin and all the other two-handed lefties that have been a lot better at throwing performance than he has been. And I feel like he deserves the criticism because he's been out there for a very long time, and he's been doing this for way longer, I believe, than even Matt and like Packy have been doing it. So just, you know, look, I'm being hard on Jesper, but I feel like that's it's real criticism, right? And I feel like giving it to him, it's right here in this spot.
Okay. I had one more winning bet on this Scorpion Mike show. Packer, that's here. One more winning bet on this Scorpion.
He can't help himself here.
Okay. That's all I want to talk about. and the bet was Packy to win over Williams. Okay. So I bet Williams against Jesper. Then I knew I had a good strong feeling that Packy was going to out bowl Williams, and I took the over in that game because I thought they're both going to be throwing urethane. They're opening them up a little bit. You know, they're going to be relaxed. They're bowling each other. They know each other well. They're friends. They room together, etc. And yeah, I was right. So another 25 into 90 bet there. So Packy wins that game. He goes on to bowl Russo, and yeah, Russo just bowled amazing. I mean, he just bowled a great game.
Packy caught a bad break in that last match with that 7-10.
Did he though? He missed right on that shot.
He did, but
it was in.
I've seen a lot of that on those bay lanes in Detroit. You see a decent amount of those flat 10s and 7-10s. It's always been like that since I remember bowling there, watching those bay lanes. There's something about those lanes that always don't seem like the 7s and 10s really want to kick out. I think the scores are always going to be lower there. I know Randy brought that up too. But look, shouts to Matt Russo, right? I think Matt Russo is starting to put his a flag in the ground that he's the best two-handed lefty on tour right now. I mean, you know, we'll talk about the world championships, but he's leading right now. He's the number one seed for the world championships on Sunday and Saturday. He's
we talked about it last week when I asked you, like, if top 10 bowlers in the world, you got a lefty in there, Mike, top 10 bowlers in the world, you got a lefty in there. We talked about it last week. I said Packy
and Russo
would be somebody I would consider. Rob said Russo would be somebody he would consider. And I acknowledge that. Thoughts?
Russo doesn't go around Packy yet. I think Packy's still ahead of him.
Ooh, okay.
But another couple of observations here is it wasn't too long ago, if you flash back about a decade ago, it was symmetrical bowling balls were winning all the titles, right? Like symmetrical balls. Like you saw Belmo with a Uproar, with a Wrecker. You saw High Roads winning a lot. You saw a lot of symmetrical pieces. And one thing that I've noticed in the last 2 to 3 years is a trend is these high-end HP, high-performance bowling balls that pro shops need to sell to be profitable and bowling brands need to sell because they're at a higher price point, they are starting to really become the norm. If you look at this, Kevin Williams was throwing a Sensor Solid, okay, which was Trax HP ball. Then Packy was throwing a Beyond Infinity,
right?
Another one of those types of balls. And then Russo won with the Cypher, which is also another high, you know. So I find that interesting. And it goes back to your point about Jesper, you know, could he go to a gym or something like that, right? I don't know if that's how the game's changing, but I don't know if it's with the pattern development or how they have everything going on. But we even seen Belmo use the gym a little bit this year on tour, which would have never been a thing in the past. So
I'll tell you my opinion on that. It's just because they keep putting more and more oil on the lane.
I do want to say, though,
bills of oil, Mike, they just keep going up.
It was really nice to see two brand new releases from two different companies. Obviously, Trax Brunswick, same company, but two different brands being thrown on a title match instead of seeing a Pitch Black against a Purple Hammer. Okay. It was nice to, it felt like the old shows of the late 90s, Mike.
Yep.
I would call the pro shop and be like, what was John Mazza throwing? Oh, a Synergy Pearl.
Right.
I want that. Like, get me that. Right.
Today's release day for two of those balls. So it worked out perfect for the companies. Right.
The Patch Pirates cheer.
Hey, one other thing about Russo too. Okay. You know, when Matt Sanders lost to Simonson throwing a backup ball, Sanders hasn't been the same since. Okay. He just hasn't. All right. And Matt's my boy. I love Matt. Okay. But here's the thing. I thought the same thing could have happened to Russo when that deal happened with Rash. When Rash called out the integrity thing on TV and Russo basically shit on himself in the 10th frame, right? Well, kudos to Russo for overcoming that, because I thought that could have been the death of his career.
Dude, I love that. The lefty, like, completely Sanders is, like, having nightmares. He's waking up in cold sweats of Anthony Simo beating him with a backup ball. Like, literally craziness.
Yeah, it was the one bet this week that I was actually happy to lose, or okay with losing anyway, just because, Matt Russo was a New Jersey high school bowler. I've known him for a long time. I've been aware of him for a long time, I should say. I practice at Rev Rates, where, you know, him and his family are involved in the place there. It's often his dad that I'm booking a lane with. So I was happy to see him win, you know, even though I had Packy in the bet. And as I said, that was an odds based bet. I actually told my my buddy who likes to hammer the betting heavy. I said, listen, if you want to hammer this heavy, Russo is the bet to hammer heavy. If you want to bet 500 or more on this tournament, take Russo to win the tournament, because that's your best bet. Well, but Mike, I told him I bet with the odds.
Talked about that Sunday. We said Russo plus 150 was the bet.
We did, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, shall we move on to Shark here, Rob?
Which was last night, so it's a lot easier to have in my memory when you have three shows in a row.
Well, you got to take notes like other people do, Rob.
No, it's all in here. I remember everything. To me, this show was it was about the right-handers and how they were getting their ball to hit the spot. And I noticed EJ Tackett was able to get his ball to face up when a lot of the right-handers couldn't get their ball to face up the right way. Even Simo couldn't get his ball to face up the right way. Prather, you know, had a little bit of challenges. I think – I don't know why he switched back to his DNA coil. I would have liked him to stay with that attention star. I think he made a bad choice switching balls in his match. But I kind of want to throw this to Flanagan. I know I'm kind of all over the place right now on this show, but I don't want to go through match by match. Thoughts, perspectives on this show, and EJ Tackett getting his first title of the year.
Oh, I was surprised Russo. I know it was a big, you know, it's kind of like that whole you bowl 300 on TV, you got let down the next game. And he won the night, you know, so the night before. So I guess that was expected, but I don't know. I thought he might have just been able to be comfortable and get that one. But it was good to see Prather back on TV. Man, that's another one of the good guys out there from being out there week to week. Somebody that would always come by, spend time in the booth, always honor his commitments, you know, whatever. He, I mean, that dude, offer insight, always say hello, goodbye, even when he didn't bowl bat. Like, that's just one of the good dudes. So I'm happy to see him back doing well, at least making a show. Simo, obviously, Simo, EJ, that was great. You know,
that was a sick match.
Yeah.
That was such a sick match. That was like everything you want if you're a bowling fan. I mean, you got two of the best of the day, player of the year last year versus the guy who was second. You know, neither of them have won yet this year. You know,
Simo won in Springfield.
Okay, no, you're right. If they win, they're bowling somebody where you know both of them are going to feel confident that they're going to win that next game. So they both
won. He was 0-4 against Simo. I didn't know that. I heard that record, which was kind of interesting to me. But it all came down to the way the ball was their reaction was to me, that was the difference of the match. Simo just couldn't get his ball to face up the pins the right way.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm being truthful, Simo got a couple really good breaks in the beginning of that game to even stay with EJ early. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they were, you know, they were some good breaks in the beginning of the game. But once he stayed in it, I was severely, severely disappointed to see him lose because, again, betting wise, I almost picked the finishing order of the entire show on this one. I had Simonson 1, Shota 2, Tackett 3, Prather 4, Russo 5 for $20 at plus 500.
Flanagan, by the way, Big Mike is king of if he puts a 15-leg parlay, he wins 14 legs. Yeah. If he puts a 5-leg parlay, he wins 4 legs.
You got a round-robin him. You got a round-robin those. Oh,
shoot, and he goes on record and says, I almost won. I almost won this. I almost won that. Almost in betting if you don't hedge.
I do win a lot. I had Simonson. So I had that bet with the exact order, and I had Simonson to win as well.
Well,
at plus 275. So let's
was a talk about the text I sent you, Mike.
You did. You sent me a text before the final and said, I'm betting everything I have in my account on EJ minus 9.5. And I said, you know what? You're right. I feel defeated right now. I feel like I just lost out on a big one, but I'm going to ride with you on that horse. And I put in a big bet myself. But the funny thing is, to me about that is that as I felt like as lost as Shota was on that pair and as poorly as he bowled, EJ still got up in the 10th and needed the first hit for us to win that bet and almost went high and didn't get it. We were fortunate there. But yes, that was a nice call on your part. I'm glad you texted me and rallied the troops because I was going to sit that one out even though I was feeling the same thing you were.
So I want to talk about why I have put that bet in. Because for me, my opinion is if Simo wasn't getting his ball to face up the right way, then Shota was going to have no chance of getting his ball to face up on that pair. When Tackett, with his rev rate and the way he generates his ball power at the bottom of his swing, it was obvious when he bowled Simo that he had an unbelievable look. And I'll take EJ all day on a long pattern when he could hit up on it and not go through the nose. And to me, like his reaction during that motive, that Pride Dynasty I mean, how could you bet against him? I thought he was going to steamroll Shota. Shota couldn't get the ball right. At one time, Timmy, his ball rep, is literally telling him where to stand and where to look. And I text Mike. I'm like, shit, Timmy should just be bowling instead of Shota at this point. Shota looked nervous, right? He did. Understandably so. He was nervous. Bowling in front of probably a lot of people, watching him from his own country, you know, had a lot on his back, a lot on his plate. EJ at this point has done it, been there, you know, player of the year, major winners, right? All kinds of titles, coming off a huge game. To me, there was no doubt in my mind that EJ was going to win, and I thought EJ was going to win by like 30 or 40. I didn't think Shota was going to bowl over 200. That was just the way I saw the pair looked. And I would have bet more money if I could, if I would have deposited more money in my account, but I didn't. I got a little bit scared there. So I don't know where you want to go with that, but that was my thoughts. Okay. Flanagan, what do you think about that final match? Anything before we move on?
Well, Shota is an incredible international talent. I mean, this guy, I watched him in match play at Woodland Bowl one year. I think it was the year Andrew actually got snubbed in the league, as a matter of fact, to make the show. And Tom Clark told a story how he was standing there with Bill Crispin, and Bill Crispin was getting into it. You know, rest in peace, Bill Crispin. But Shota's awesome. And I was literally shocked that Shota was throwing it over his toe and could not get the ball right. He just had a dead case of the tugs. And I don't know his game well enough, but I feel like there was a timing issue. I feel like his feet were quick, which can happen on television, which causes the arm to come down and tug the ball. And he just he's too good. He's too much of a throwbot from Japan that he repeats, and something was off. And I felt bad for him, honestly. And when you talk about a lot riding, he committed to bowling the entire tour this year. He's been over here, man. I mean, I talk about, hey, being on the road 120 days a year with being able to go home for weekends or take breaks. This guy's been over here, man. That was a big night for him and a ton of pressure.
Yep.
EJ's
freewheeling, right? Like, relax. Like, just, you know, freewheeling essentially. So my money's going on the freewheel, relaxed player of the year who – by the way, Blake Ernest in the chat, where does this put EJ in player of the year talk? Let's talk after world championships. Because if Matt Russo wins the world championships, he's putting himself directly into the player of the year chat. And this is going to be a close player of the year, I feel like. This is going to go down to like super like last tournament, in my opinion.
Do you guys remember the movie The Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Where they had that. Sure.
You remember the movie, Flanagan? You remember the movie?
I remember the movie. It's been a long time.
Okay. I felt watching that show last night, I felt like Shota must have felt like the contestants on The Running Man. Like that's how he must have felt like.
You mean like some American Gladiators?
Yeah, I may have fought a little bit in my day. I may have been victorious a couple times, but I have a professional killer coming after me right now. And you know, it's a tough spot to be in.
It's crazy player of the year chat right now, because you'll have Matt Russo, who puts himself in, EJ Tackett, who's there. Hey, our boy Bill needs to have a big finish, but he's still in the chat.
And Russo ain't in yet.
If he wins number one seed for the world championship, if he wins one more match.
If he wins the world championship, he might be the front runner at that point.
But you have Kyle Troop.
If EJ Tackett wins the world championship, he may be the front runner at point.
So let's
I agree, Rob. I think we're going to see it come down to the wire. You know, it's going to depend on how this turns out, and what the players who are in the mix after this set of shows on the weekend, what they do afterwards. All right, so let's give people the step ladders.
Hey guys, one other thing about this show. Sorry, but I just want to get it in here. I was watching that show. Do you know that Prather's kind of got a little different look with his stash? Did you notice?
Ooh.
Did you guys notice that a little bit? Stash is a little different, a little thicker, a little thicker. And he reminded me of Steve Jaros a little bit, a modern-day Steve Jaros. and Steve's getting in the Hall of Fame this year. So I just kind of sort of was like paralleling Steve Jarosz's career and Chris Prather's career and the way they bowl and how many boards they cover. I was like, man, this might be Steve Jarosz 2.0 here.
Well, do people want Flanagan to be a permanent host of Sweep the Rack?
This kid was hating on us in the chat 10 minutes ago. He was hating on us in the chat 10 minutes
ago. That's what I love our people, because they hate like we hate. So it's just all, it's a big family of just nonsense debauchery.
Yeah, I got to go home and fill your mother's dish. hate. Okay. Chappelle Show dude, reference, hey. I got you.
Maybe Prather keeps that stash if he keeps bowling good.
They both look like Mr. Flanders is what.
Oh yeah, that's what it was. That's what it is.
Steve Jarosz and Prather both have that Mr. Flanders kind of look to them. But Mike, honestly, to compare Prather and Jarosz as bowlers, I feel like is somewhat disrespectful to Prather.
Oh, well, Blake, you're allowed to hate, bro. You're in Sweep the Rack. That's what we do. Debauchery and all kinds of craziness here off the rails.
Respectful to pray Steve Jarosz, man, he was the man.
Oh,
yo, Chris Prather has one of the best games ever.
I love his game. I mean,
who does it? Like you think about the best games ever, it's like Ozio, it's Parker, it's Chris Prather. Okay, he's in that. He's on that list. Okay, he's on that list.
No, I'll put Norm in there too.
Yeah, you think Norm? I don't know. Weber definitely.
That pose like by Norm up the gutter.
Steve Jarosz is on that list. Guys,
real quick, Jarosz. Okay, 8 titles all time. Okay, championship round appearances. That's television shows. 1996 too, and I'm just going up each year. 5-2-2-3-2-3-5-3-2-2-1-1-1-1. And then, of course, you know, he got older. But he made a ton of shows.
Okay, I'm not saying that. I'm saying the way they throw it. You know, I mean, man, Chris Prather. That's like
Doug Kent. That's a good one, Doug Kent.
All right, let's do the step ladder.
First off, let's talk about a 9-man step ladder, which is a lot better than the 18-man step ladder. But come on, stop with this nonsense.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Okay, Packy, first match ball, Mike Martell. Martell slips in to knock Belmo out in the position round, I believe. Tonight, actually, it happened. Winner bowls Kyle Sherman.
Who are you liking that first match?
I got to take Packy just based on experience. Yeah. But Martell is a wild card. You know, I can't go against my guy from Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, I mean.
No, that's my guy. We grew up in the same
bowl center. You know he ain't going to go down without a fight.
Yeah, he's a lot younger than me, and he used to bowl when he was like a little kid in Maple Lanes, and they used to just turn on the lanes because his mom used to work the front desk, and he used to just bowl as like a little kid, Mike Martell, so.
Hey, Mike, if this was like the Super Bowl and you could bet on all kinds of weird stuff, okay, I got a prop bet for you in match number one.
Mm. Okay.
0 for a frame.
Ooh, for a frame, 0. What do you mean?
Who, like somebody throws a gutter?
No.
Like
2 gutters.
Oh, the whole frame?
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's impossible.
Shot clock violation.
Oh.
That's like a safety in the Super Bowl.
Will there be a shot clock violation? I like that.
In match number one.
Okay. There's some big odds on that. I would imagine. Okay, so the winner of the shot clock match will call.
Kyle Sherman.
Good to see Kyle Sherman make a world championship show, even though he's the 7th seed and he needs to win like 30 matches to win. Winner bowls Eric Jones. It's good to see Eric Jones make a show. He's been grinding all year, through PTQs. So that's an interesting show there from Edmond, Oklahoma. Justin Knowles, we're kind of seeing a trend here at this point. Kyle Sherman will be the only righty bowling on the first show, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then EJ Tackett, who's going to be, I don't even know at this point what seed he is.
He's going to be the 4th seed, but he'll be bowling in the 4-5 match on the second show.
Yep. Then he bowls Fa who bowls Jesper and then bowls Matt Russo. Oof. So this could be a very interesting show for EJ, my opinion.
I mean, listen, because I have a future bet on EJ in this tournament to win.
Yeah, me too.
Back to the betting. I got to be honest with you. I feel like I can light that ticket on fire.
I don't know. He's the only righty. So
I don't think there's any way
bowling on the
he's running a ladder against lefties. All the lefties. It's bound that one of the lefties is going to find something out of the three or four that he's going to have to go through.
I think after Mike just said that, I'm going to put more money on EJ to win that. I'm serious because, like, every time Mike is so sure of something, it's – look, if there's any time EJ could run a ladder, it's this time because he could make a shot for himself and he'll have it for the whole show essentially unless Kyle Sherman ends up winning and ends up making the second show, which I don't see that happening. EJ is going to bowl, you know, a Knowles or Jones, in my opinion. And then it's going to be the only righty. And then he's going to be able to bowl against a lot of lefties throwing urethane. Fa will be probably throwing urethane. Knowles probably throwing urethane. Jesper will be throwing urethane. So I feel like at this point, like he has a legit chance to run a ladder being the only righty and able to like open the lane up for himself. I don't know. Flanagan, thoughts on this 9-man, 2-show stepladder?
If we had all the time in the world, I think we should sit around and pick each player and try to paint a picture of how they can win, right? But we don't have all the time in the world, so I'm just going to pick a couple things.
Okay.
One thing is I can't believe Kyle Sherman's inside this show. Or as good as they were on the left, and to look at all the right-handers that entered this tournament, and somebody who's been banged up, living in West Virginia, having a baby, but still practicing. He told me that the internet doesn't even hardly work where he is. He's out in the boonies. I think that's what you call it. He's out in the outskirts of town. And if they're streaming something on the internet, they can't even get on the internet on their phone because it'll screw up the streaming. So all he's doing is taking care of a baby, focusing on his business, and bowling at the bowling center all the time. So shout out to him for making it. And when you look at that first show, as you mentioned, Rob, I think being the great right hope, the only right-hander on the show, if they get nice for him, he could win that show. And he has past history in that building. He bowled the Cheetah Championship there in a yellow Columbia 300 jersey. I specifically remember this. And he bowled Dick Allen for the title. And that night, he is when the YouTube channel was starting to really pop and the place was packed. And Sherman had everybody behind him, okay? And he might have everybody behind him on this show. And he could be feeding off that adrenaline. So I do like Sherman, and I know he's a St. Louis guy, and he's my boy. But I do like Sherman there. Then when you look at the second show here, anytime you have one of the big three on the side of the lane by themselves with no other traffic, and he would be the only motive person on the show, more than likely, okay? Spangler didn't get much airtime over last night. They didn't bring Spangler on that I noticed until after the match was over and EJ already won. And what Spangler had to say about EJ bowling smart, making these right decisions on the show, and with having the momentum coming over from the other night, I don't know. I would put a small taste on EJ Tackett to run the lefties down. Because I just think that that's what could happen. So I like the right-handers here.
I already got a taste. So I'll take it, but
I got to post comment out because people like to shit on me in the chat and I want to defend myself here. Rob just pooped over all Dio for being the lefty. EJ doesn't get beat up for doing the same thing. I think this is a little bit of a different situation in the fact that, Dio was bowling on a Cheetah that was very high scoring and was the only lefty on a very high scoring pattern. I think EJ having the whole right side to himself is a little bit different in the fact that he's probably not going to be throwing urethane and he's not going to be firing it at the gutter and being able to stand on five for the whole show. But I do think not taking credit away from Dio though, because I didn't. I said he deserved his win. He did. He bowled great. But, like, hey, I'm calling a spade a spade. The scores were high. He was the only lefty.
And the lefties have had the advantage. I mean, Joe, did you hear, did you pay attention to the World Championship Top 16? Did you hear the show? I mean, the lefties clearly have the advantage. So I think when you're talking about E.J. Tackett in that situation, you're looking at it from the perspective of saying, well, the lefties probably have the advantage in terms of what they got out there, and he's gonna go out and have to overcome that in a way.
I don't know if we've seen the lefties have the advantage in the Arena Bay, though. I don't know if we have. True. I don't know if we could say that now.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point.
Yeah. I think it's always been like that. And I think last week I actually made that comment. I think the left side's a little bit they're finicky in that bay. They are, just the way the ball rolls into the pins. You could just see a lot of deflection if you watch the ball hitting the pins.
But with that said, Jesper did beat Belmo, and they have won two of the three titles. And if a lefty wins this one, it's going to be 3 out of 4. So,
yeah.
Good points. Yeah.
All right, fellas, are we ready to wrap it up? It's way past my bedtime here. I know you are both in a different time zone than me, but I'm going to be dying tomorrow morning. I hope the people appreciate this content tonight. But it was a good show. It was a good show. I'm glad we decided to do it.
Mike, we appreciate everything, seriously. Good luck. Keep in touch here. You're welcome on any time. I think Flanagan gives a very good third opinion to our debauchery and nonsense that we talk.
I'm 100% open to Flanagan being a regular every week guest on the show to break down bowling with us. I mean, especially during the season. I don't know if he'd want to come and deal with our antics in the off season when we're arguing about just inane things in the bowling world. But yeah, in terms of the PBA season, Mike, if you want to come back next week, come back next week. You want to come on Sunday, come on Sunday. If it's a good show and you want to jump on with us Sunday, let us know. And I meant what I said before. If Bowl TV ain't going to give a home to Mike Flanagan, Sweep the Rack and give a home to Mike Flanagan. So, Mike, you just let us know, bro. Thanks for joining us tonight. Thanks for the time. It was good to hear from you. I'm glad that the people got word on what's been going on, et cetera. I think it was needed, and I told you that behind the scenes as well. So I'm glad that people, got word about what's going on with you. We gave the people an update. Betting-wise, follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter if you want the betting advice. We'll be chopping it up on Twitter, as always.
Back to the betting.
Well, I got to bet the shows, bro. We got shows.
Dude, to bet. I love betting.
Like I pointed out with that Kevin Williams bet, there's soft spots in these shows.
There's
soft spots in these shows. And if you watch and you pay attention and you find one of those soft spots, you can really hit them. You can really hit them hard. So, I'm all about it. I'm going to be watching the shows myself.
Final thoughts before we let you go.
I just enjoyed talking some bowling. The first half an hour of the show, I hated talking about that stuff. But I love talking some bowling. I appreciate you guys constantly doing your show. I don't know if I can come on every week, but hit me up. Let me, what's going on. I'd love to talk some shop. I watch these shows and I have these weird observations and I try to tie it to history because I'm a historian of the game. And, we'll see what happens here on these two shows. I'm going to enjoy watching them. And, thanks for having me on. And I appreciate again, all you guys are doing here and all your fans and all the people that continue to watch professional bowling and try to take it forward. That's what we need, is more raving fans. And subscribe to Bowl TV. There's not enough subscribers. I know that I'm not working there right now. I'm still, again, just if you got here late, I am still under contract with Bowl TV, and I may still be used in the future. Just right now, it is a hiatus for a bit. Sorry we didn't communicate it better to the audience throughout the process. So,
well, we just did. So I know everybody misses you. And I'm sure if you do come back for a show, it'll be like the comeback show. It'll be like, when The Rock came back to WWE this past year, even though Big Mike doesn't know a thing about any of that. So, all right, guys. Well, we're gonna wrap up here. We appreciate everybody. Hit us up, social media. We'll be on Sunday talking World Championships, two shows, 9-man stepladder.
And we'll have our regular breakdown of the whole
worst of the week.
Right? We're going to tell you who we want to ride with, who we're not riding with, milk carton.
I'm sure Michael talks
betting. We get to give out dumpster diving gold medal of the whole World Series. That's going to be good. So yeah, definitely join us.
And I'm sure Michael talk betting, and we'll have worst of the week because there's a few going on right now. I got two front contenders for worst of the week.
I'm at exactly plus 400 for the week right now. There was actually, I got to be honest, something very positive happened during the pod tonight. There was actually a bet I forgot about that I won. So I actually hit for more today than I thought, and I thought it was much worse than it is. So I'm actually still at plus 400 going into these last two shows. I got EJ Tackett ticket to win. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. And I'm going to AC next weekend for a dance competition. So whatever I end up with here for the weekend, we're rolling it right into AC, baby. We're rolling it right into AC.
Here you go. Okay?
Which means I'm giving it all back in one weekend. So
I like it.
All good.
All right, everybody. Take care. We'll see you guys Sunday night. Later, guys.
You are now listening to Sweep the Rack Podcast featuring Brooklyn Rob and Big Mike.